So our special guest today is Corey Grusin. For all of you who already know who Corey Grusin is, you know about the stories. If you don't know who Corey Grusin is,
you're about to learn about the stories.
Sit back and wait, because it's a doozy. This is this was one of the funnest episodes that we've done so far. Interesting, we try to wrap them up within an hour, right? And if you've listened to any of our previous episodes, we talk a little bit about how we talked to Tom for like an hour and a half, and we talked to Michael for an hour. Corey,
Three hours,
which you don't turn it off yet, because this is not a three-hour episode.
No.
We really edited it back.
We're just going to give you the nuggets of wisdom.
Yes, yes, which he actually gave quite a bit. And to be honest with you, for, again, all of us that know him, I kind of throw Corey into the technologist bucket, right? Like a very, very senior engineer. And during this conversation, I learned that he's way more than just a normal software engineer that codes and games and does that kind of things. It's like his business acumen was fantastic. His financial acumen is fantastic. So I can't wait for the listeners to get a little bit of that wisdom.
He's a guy, if you found yourself in a dilemma, you would want Corey in your foxhole. I'll just put it that way.
1,000%.
Yep.
1,000%.
Yep.
And so, you know, maybe we'll release more of that information. You know, then that maybe you'll get the 3-hour episode downstream, and then you can drive all the way to Tampa from Jacksonville. But anyway, without further ado, this is with Corey Grusin. Thanks for coming.
Enjoy,
Corey.
And how I'm you Corey doing? Grusin.
Yeah, that's a nice voice.
Corey.
CG. CG to the layman.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thanks, guys.
We're great. We're glad to have you. I guess a big takeaway for me. I know you're advising a lot of people. You're advising a lot of product people. You're advising a lot of engineers. What's like the biggest advice that you could give someone going into the market, and then someone currently in the market right now,
and someone exiting the market,
wanting to retire? Better.
Since I'm on that end too.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. So all three: entering, in it, exiting. And there's three different advice segments, but I would love to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the entering one's probably been covered a lot by people. If I had to sit down with 10 software development students coming out of college, is that where you're at pretty much?
Sure. Or a boot camp or something. They're starting into the workforce.
And I just had this conversation with somebody like this in New York recently. I was like, he said, oh, yeah, I'm looking for work. I'm doing this internship. I'm working with these people here. And he did not live in New York. He lived in like Virginia or something. He was visiting for this event. And I was like, well, is there some cool spots that you really want to work with in Virginia? And he's like, I was like, are you in the cool part of Virginia? And he's like, no. I was like, all right. My unsolicited advice to you would be to save up your shekels or do whatever it is you got to do. And go apply for all the cool tech companies maybe out west in the markets like New York, Seattle, whatever. And just do it. Do it now because you can. And don't worry about the money. Like, don't worry about the expenses, the living expenses. People are going to say it's going to be very expensive to live there. I'm like, just make it work. Yep. Work backwards.
Yep.
Live.
It was like what you did.
Yeah, live on ramen.
I mean, San Francisco is one of the most expensive cities in the world, and you were there for $400, which is unheard of.
And if you and I was like, if you can get on with Facebook or Google or any of these big ones, you're done. You're set. If you have them on your resume and you don't get fired.
Well, that's why they have Google, X Meta. Right. That's why that's there. And their title.
And that's like the special forces kind of like entering the market. If we're going to scale back and be a little bit more less gung ho, it's like, look, just do what I said earlier, is focus on being the best at whatever it is you're working on. Like whatever technology you're working on, don't jump ship. Just be really good at it. Learn how to read the code. Are we talking about programmers and stuff?
Sure. Stuff? Yeah.
I was like
the big thing is read.
Learn how to read code, because all these projects you get placed on, all these projects you probably work with, programmers come in, they write more stuff, and then they come in and they're like, oh, I don't understand how this works. I'm going to write it new. I'm like, well, that's because you don't know how to read it. because you're not a good programmer.
Yeah.
And I suck at that too. I'm still like, I'm not anywhere near where I need to be, but it's like, read the code, read it. You don't even have to tinker with it. Just read it and try to understand it and you'll get better.
Understand what it's trying to do.
Correct. Because now when you get placed or you get into a new position, it's like, cool, I know. Yeah. I can rip through this really fast and I know what's going on. And now you become an expert on that code and now you're invaluable in it and you're entrenched. And now you can be like, well, now you can pay me $200 an hour.
Yeah. There it is.
And you know, that's easy. Cause it's like, now you get to read code and it's just like the Warren Buffett method. Like he just reads a lot. That's how you find investments. Same thing with programming. Read a lot of code. Writing code's easy. Reading it and learning. I don't understand what is going on. This is spaghetti code. Okay. Well, you get to see all the bad examples.
Yeah.
Now you go write your 500 lines, not 10,000. Yep. Middle, you know, after you've got your chops, like probably in your 30s, in your 40s, it's like, yeah, you're going to be probably more of in a management role, I would say, like you're leading developers.
Yeah.
And you're going to, before you get there, before you start doing that, you should start less reading of code, more reading of how do I deal with people? Drucker, like go, yeah, like which, learn.
Right. Which is another good, I want to kind of segue in that because that's a really good point because you're all right. You're in the middle of your career.
I know, not you.
But I'm saying a listener.
It's me. I'm humble.
Middle of their career. And they're going into that leadership. And you're absolutely right. It's not so much about you're not writing code anymore. You're leading. And it's a whole different dynamic is like, how do you lead people and how do you, and so you're, to your point, going back to those books, right? And reading, you know, how you can influence organizations or influence the people that you're responsible for now. Cause you're not, you're, Simon Sinek said it one time, was one of my favorite lines is in management, you're not responsible for the results anymore. You're responsible for the people.
Correct.
That are responsible for the results, which I love that line because you have to step back and that's really hard, especially for a programmer. I can imagine that being very difficult. Because you know how to write the code, but now you're having someone else do it. And you're probably, if you're doing a code audit, you're looking at it, I wouldn't have done it that way. Like, how do you get them to do it the way that you would do it? Or how do you trust them that maybe they are doing it the right way as opposed to the way that you would do it?
You're totally right. And, you know, you go from, it's very easy to program software because software doesn't talk back and it does what you say it's going to do. And then the trap a lot of people I see fall into, and I'm like, I just shut up. You know, smart man thinks twice as nothing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you're in these meetings, you're in these things, and it's like, okay, I get what's going on here. It's like, it's because you're trying to control and program people now. And people don't respond like writing code does one way. And, you know, some overlaying advice that I think is extremely valuable in all these cases, whether you're entering the market or you're in this second phase in management is like, yeah, you definitely need to look at training yourself. Like it's okay to spend $1,000 or $3,000 on a Tony Robbins thing or like a Dale Carnegie course. Like you do that. That's what's going to help you with your job. If you're managing people, don't try to figure it out yourself. That's the key point. And then, yeah, I mean, that middle part, managing people, dealing with people, the how to win friends and influence people, like learn how people tick. Like now you're learning psychology, human behavior, the results, you know, you're going to look at like, oh, the code's got a deadline. You're going to come down, micromanage all these people. And it's like, oh, go faster, go faster, go faster. And it's like, no. You know what to do. What did you do? You read code. It's like another quote, you know, Abe Lincoln, give me 6 hours to chop down a tree. I'm going to spend the first four sharpening my axe. And it's like, okay, well, what does that mean and translate into software? It's like, well, if you have 2 weeks to do this and get it out the door and everybody's green, doesn't know what's going on, it's like, well, it's probably going to be a lot faster if you spend the first week, everybody just learning how it works. Don't code anything. Just learn.
Yeah, dive and don't write one line of code. Yeah, I learned that a lot at HashRocket. Like, stunning that we're going to do this. We're going to figure this out before we actually ever write one line.
Yep. So that Abe Lincoln quote. Also true.
Yeah, very true.
And I stick to that too. It's like when I learn something, I want to do something, I'll learn it. I'll go watch YouTube videos for like an hour. I'll give myself an hour and I'll create a playlist. It's like, all right, cool. Now I got a good idea. And then, you know, it's funny the retirement side of things because.
So on the exit.
Yeah. Because now I'm.
The final phase, if you will. Right.
Yeah, that's right. Is, you know, it's a long journey. So if you can start in that entry phase, start your investment, start something, have something, get in the habit of saving like 10% of your income, like Earl Nightingale says, and Napoleon Hill and all those guys from who are dead. They had the original, the OG advice. All it takes is 10%. And then people are like, oh, what does that mean? Because when you get to retirement, you're like, I want to have financial literacy. You're going to have to learn it yourself in parallel because you don't fall susceptible, hopefully, to lifestyle creep. And that's another overarching thing, lifestyle creep. But it's like 10%. You know, if you make $2,000 a paycheck, that means I don't care. You know, if you have $2,000 hit your account, you should be automatically no-brainer, stop what you're doing. $200 goes into my savings account or $200 goes into my investment account. And then it's like, who cares? It
sits there.
Right. It could just sit there. Who cares? But if you want to get crazy with it, pick a mutual fund. If you're starting it young in your first life, it almost doesn't matter what you do. You're going to win because you have compounding interest, you know?
Yep.
You know, you can dabble in real estate or buy your house or whatever, but that'll lock you down. I think staying mobile and quick and lean to where it's like, you don't have to get in a position of like, I need money. So I wouldn't suggest buying houses and stuff like that unless it's something you know. So stay in your circle of competence. Keep doubling down on getting training, you know, go to the conferences. I'm not terribly fond of conferences for learning because it's more networking, but it's like, cool, go online and pay the $1,000 or $3,000 for how do you do iPhone app development or whatever it is. So if you're doing that in the first phase and you're lucky enough to be in the first phase right now, do that. Because when you do retire, you're going to be like, cool, I know how money works to some degree. I don't have to be a Warren Buffett. I don't have to be a Bill Ackman. I don't have to be a hedge fund guy. I don't have to do any of that. It's like, I just need to know the basics. And you're probably going to want to mostly do it yourself this whole time as well, because I'm never a fan of letting somebody else manage my money because they're not going to do it as best as I am. And I just traded minutes of my life for those dollars. And if you're messing it up for me, I'm going to be really pissed because you trade money for time. And like retirement, it's like, cool. When you go to retirement, I don't think you're going to be doing as much as you think you're going to be doing. So before you get there, sorry, you asked about advice for exiting.
Yeah.
It really isn't so much the exiting that part. It's what you have done prior. Mm-hmm. And it's
all the things that you led up to this. Right.
So it's like, if you are fortunate enough to have some time, doesn't matter how much time till retirement, you have to make sure you're doing you have hobbies, you have things going on. Like you can't, on one hand, yeah, be the best, learn all the time, et cetera. But on, you know, right following that statement, it's like, well, you also need to make sure you carve time out to keep doing the things you're doing. No matter if like the deadlines, cool. Once in a while, you can stay and hammer. But when that becomes normal, and you're not able to go do the things for you, even if you have kids and families, it's like, no, you need time for you. Because if you don't, you're going to hit retirement and be like, shit, what do I do in my life? And it's going to be very scary, very depressing, very anxietal. You know, a lot of people start drinking heavily because they don't know how to cope with the shit. And it's like, cool, you're going to drink more. You're going to do drugs more. You're going to do whatever more. And it's like, luckily.
It becomes a habit.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's very easy. And then now you become an alcoholic. Now your health declines. Now it's just not getting better.
Right. Yeah.
And it's going to get worse fast. So really it's like, you want that smooth transition. It's like, cool. You have things going on because when you stop working, those things keep going. And people have this grandiose idea is like, oh, I need to work really hard all the time, get the deadlines, miss out on doing things, not do my hobbies, save all this money. Because in retirement, I'm going to do all this stuff. I'm like, no, you're not. You're probably not.
You're not going to do any of those things.
And, you know, we get sucked into like social media and Instagram and it's like, oh man, these people are going to they're going to go on the Ritz-Carlton cruises and all this shit. And it's like, I don't do that. It's expensive. And I'm not going to do that.
right. play Lego.
Yeah. And that's fine. And I, you know, maybe it's me and somebody hears this, but you know, you really need to take care of yourself mentally of like, dude, it's okay. It's okay to tell yourself it's okay. It's okay to not be extravagant. It's okay for you to retire with five, you know, pick a number. It doesn't matter. It's okay. And because you'll figure it out. You're not going to, you don't have to go do all these crazy trips. You think you're going to go travel the world the whole time you're in retirement. You're not. You want to be around your friends and family. You want to do these things you've been doing. You will travel. You won't do it as much probably as you think you are. This is I'm very opinionated on this only because I've seen a lot of examples and there are exceptions, but the great number of the big sample set I've seen is there's a lot of affluent people I know that don't do shit. It's like, they just do the same thing. They go to the gym like everybody else every day. They might go every day compared to like what we're doing or like what people in the middle part of their career are doing, like, you know, 3 days a week versus the 5 days a week.
Right.
So when you're retirement, you just kind of ramp up these things and it's like, cool, you want to play golf?
You do the things that you enjoy doing.
Yeah. You'll play a little more golf and then you'll putz around just like, you know, Jeff Bezos says, oh, I putz around. So it's like, that's the thing is like when you retire, you have to, it's all the things that you've been doing up to that point. And then those two phases prior, yeah, you have to do this set of things over here to make sure you get there and you're comfortable. And then again, it sounds like I'm contradicting myself a little bit where it's like, well, you also need to make sure you're keeping some time for yourself on the way. Cause don't forget to live life while you're doing all this.
Right.
And I think that's where, you know, I may have gone way to the left on that one. I might be a super exception, but it's like, yeah, people, what's stopping you? Don't be afraid like of quitting your job, getting placed somewhere else. Like, I just want to try contracting. I just want to, hey, do you have any jobs? Is there any companies you can place me in like Seattle?
Yeah.
Or I can be in London and working for these people. I just want to go live London life. Go do that. Spend some money. Take 6 months out of your life. It's okay. You're not going to go broke. You're still going to be retired. You're still going to have money at retirement. Go do these things, whatever. And your health.
Experience.
Yeah.
Right. It's all about, yeah.
And you said drinking and all that stuff. And like drinking becomes a problem I've seen from experience in retirement when you're not aware of it while you're working and while you're going on the way to retirement. If you want to, like, health is wealth. So again, that's there's so much. I have so many things.
Yeah. The big thing, and I'll say this and then we probably need to wrap it up.
Sure.
Is from what I found out in regards to whether it's drinking, you know, pick your flavor. It's if nothing, when you retire, you don't necessarily have anything that's keeping you accountable if you haven't set those things up. If it's drinking my job's keeping me accountable a little bit because I still have to get up and I still have to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You enter in retirement and you could dumb it down to, you can dumb it down to when you take off vacation during the holidays, but it's a staycation. You don't have anything planned.
Right.
And what you find yourself doing is, and I'm speaking to myself and I've had to check myself, but you are having that extra drink because it's like, oh, I'm bored. So I'm just going to sit here on the couch watching TV and now I've got a cocktail in my hand. And then all of a sudden you're not doing anything. And if it's a turnkey and you go into retirement without those hobbies or without those accountability things that you've already been prepping for or that you've already established in your life. So if you're just a 9-to-5 workaholic that also drinks when he gets home, and then all of a sudden you find yourself in retirement, all you're really is it now you're a 9-to-9 drinker.
Correct.
That's all you are. And so and nothing is actually making your gray matter more wrinkly. You're not accountable to anybody. And all of a sudden, and you see, I've met very formerly successful, affluent people that are a shell of what they used to be because they did not, they were a workaholic. Then they made their money, they did the thing, and then they lost it all. And so now they're just in a pit of depression and alcohol. Yeah,
you're absolutely correct. Like, you know, whatever you're doing just gets amplified.
Yep.
So if you're doing nothing and you are doing all these other vices, the nothingness gets amplified.
All the vices become everything.
Correct. And those get extra amplified because it's so easy.
Yeah. Right.
So yeah, that's how, that's my unsolicited advice for that.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, Corey, absolutely loved having you. You know what? You're one of my good friends, and I admire you a lot. So I'm so glad that you're able to attend Two Recruiters and a Microphone.
Thanks, yes. Guys.
Yes.
You too.
All right.
Israel, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Corey.
You got it. Thank you, my friend. See ya.
Thanks.
All right. That is a wrap for Two Recruiters and a Microphone. Thank you for everybody listening in on our interviews with our special guests. I do want to take a few minutes. I want to thank a few different people. First and foremost, Buzzsprout. I mean, Israel and I would not be anywhere without the support of your team. The studio here is absolutely amazing. The product is amazing. The platform is amazing. Again, if you're looking into podcasting, please look to buzzsprout.com. Follow their blog. Follow their lessons. They've taught Israel and I a pretty tremendous amount in the past.
Boatload?
Buttload. Yeah, boatload.
I said boatload. You said buttload.
Yeah, there you go. Well, darn it. We'll edit that out. They also gave me a tool for that. But anyway, so thank you to Buzzsprout. Thank Varick Rossetti. He's one of the top designers that I have personally ever worked with. And I can't believe, even when I pitched the idea of what Israel and I were working on with Varick, we maybe laughed for maybe 15 minutes just about the name. And of course, you know, just where Israel kind of came up with it. And then for him to literally go away for an hour and come back with this fantastic logo. Cannot thank you enough, Varick, for supporting us with that. And then lastly, I want to thank Rick Collado and Hurricane Party providing this music. Known Rick for 30 years. He's one of my closest friends, and he's one of the most talented musicians I know. So to even reach out to him and say, hey, we're kind of crazy idea. We're going to do this podcast. Do you do some music for me, maybe? And then, oh, by the way, I always really like Hurricane Party. Can I take that beat? And then off we go. He comes in, he edits it. And thank you so much, Rick, for your support there. And again, last but not least, thank you to the listeners. Thank you to the support, the family, friends. Thank you for listening. And we will see you next time.
See you on the next cast.
See you.